Here we are at West Haven Beach. Welcome to The Forest and the Trees, Global and Local Perspectives on the Environment, with your host, Melinda Tuhus. So today, we're going to be spending the show speaking with Elaine Kolb, who is a self-described activist on many issues. One of the issues is definitely disability rights, and I thought of this because we've just celebrated the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. But it sounds like from our initial conversation, it might be wide-ranging. So I'm going to extend my mic in a COVID-safe manner to Elaine, and Elaine will tell us what she wants to tell us. So really good to have you on the show, Elaine.
Well, it's an honor to be invited, and it's kind of, for me personally, it's an interesting period of time because I am, besides being an activist, I'm an artist. And one of the things that happens in times of crisis and catastrophe, that creative people get highly stimulated. And I have been highly stimulated, and along with a lot of other people. And so yes, this is a very thoughtful time for a lot of us. It's a time, I look at it and hope that people can view it as a wake-up call. It's like we were going along, and although a lot of people knew that it was really important to do some things to actually preserve and save our world so that we have a place to be in, people were preoccupied with a lot of things. And a lot of the things people get preoccupied with are very, very destructive. That's just how it is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about perspective, because timing is about perspective. And one perspective that I think is critical for all of us to begin to adopt is the perspective of Indigenous people who look down the road 7 generations. It's a vision for 7 generations. What we do now, how will it affect the world and life for 7 generations into the future? And of course, we are raised in a culture of, you know, I got mine, what's wrong with you, and I got to get more. Greedy, greedy, greedy. Selfish, selfish. Me, myself, and I. Timing. Right now, personally, besides the 30th anniversary of the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, very big deal for me. I've been arrested 27 times so far in disability rights stuff, and mostly with the organization called ADAPT and another organization called Not Dead Yet. And it's fascinating to me how so much of what we were struggling to accomplish, some of it realized with the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, but some of what we were trying to accomplish is now being accelerated because so many people are experiencing what it's like to live on the edge of survival, which is what we have to do. We are, as people with disabilities, we are presented with situations where if you don't struggle, if you don't really, really, really adapt, figure out how you can find new ways to do things, accomplish things in a different way, find allies as you go along, change your plans because it's out of your control. All those kinds of things are survival things for people that are very low income, and especially people with disabilities. And the majority of us are very low income everywhere. So what's fascinating is that even relatively privileged people that have had a lot more choices are in the position of experiencing some of what we experience on a regular basis. It's very inconvenient. It's like Mother Nature decided to push the pause button. It's like we were destroying everything all over the world. It's horrible what we've been doing as human beings. Greed, greed, greed. Stupidity. And Mother Nature pushed the pause button and said, okay, you think you're so powerful? Watch this. And here we are. It's a wake-up call. But what do we need to wake up to? Well, very basic things. What the world needs right now and all life needs: clean air, clean water, you know, and fair, responsible, resourceful distribution. At this point, it's horrifying that so many people, even here in the richest country that has ever existed, that so many people are hungry. And right now, the stock market is booming, having a grand time because rich folks are doing better than ever, while poor folks are losing everything. Even middle-income people are losing everything. So, perspective. It's so important for people to realize what very low-income communities have understood all along. We really are in this together. That if you go to functional low-income places around the world, you'll find that people actually really do help each other. I mean, that's one of the amazing things when you go and you get together with people that are living in real communities. They really do take care of each other. They do care, and everyone is included. So right now, the people that are most in danger because of the climate change issues around the world, all of the wars, and this pandemic, the people that are most at risk are the people who also have the best ideas and the best experience as to how to adapt, how to recycle, how to make do. Back during what they call the Big Depression here in the United States, one of the sayings was, you know, use it up, wear it out, make do, or do without. That's what we've got to get back to. That's what we need to look forward to. If we're going to create something new that is sustainable, then it means that we have to include and value everyone. And right now, some people are expendable and some people are essential. And a lot of times we're the same people. You know? And then in the midst of all this, some people are still making a whole lot of money. What's wrong with this picture, kids? So, on the local immediate level, we need to look around and look to our neighbors and look to our family and look to ourselves and find those things that can lift us all. The new Poor People's Campaign is wonderful and does a lot of really good things. And one of the songs that has emerged from that is, when you lift from the bottom, everyone rises. And so those of us, you know, who really have been struggling all along, we have a lot of the answers as to how to help each other through all of this. And it's just fascinating to me, for years and years and years, people with disabilities have tried to get accommodations to make it possible to work at home and not, okay, well, guess what? And all of these also communication advances and stuff, so that you can, like, we have everybody's on Zoom calls now, which, by the way, is just fascinating to me, because right now, as part of the 30th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, there is an explosion of things that Zoom calls and things on the internet, on the YouTube and everything. And I have been honored to be included in some of it because of the fact that I wrote some of the songs that were used to help get the ADA passed. And so look up ADA 30, Lead On. Look up the Americans with Disabilities Act. There's a whole bunch of stuff that is on YouTube and around on Facebook and whatever. And a lot of people are not as aware of disability rights and disability justice. Look up disability justice, okay? Because that's what we need right now, is justice. And if we can achieve disability justice and compassionate inclusion of everyone, at this point, everyone who is living in any kind of an institution, whether it be a nursing home or a prison or a group home or mental hospital, whatever, any kind of an institution, where you don't get to come and go as you please. Anyone who's in a hospital right now is in danger. We need to do those things to protect ourselves as individuals. But we also have to realize that the lives of people with disabilities are valuable. Throwing us away, for some people, is a good idea.
I'm speaking with Elaine Kolb, who is a disability rights activist and an activist on a lot of other justice issues. Elaine, I wanted to say I watched a bunch of the ADA 30, not the whole thing, but I saw quite a bit of it. And then I've been watching Crip Camp, which is amazing.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, it's a documentary that was, I mean, it's shot over time, but it starts like around 1970, I think, when these kids with disabilities of all kinds go to this camp in upstate New York, I believe.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of them are from New York City. And it's just, you know, it was amazing, like watching them do sports, like watching this guy, this counselor, throw a ball to kids with, I don't know if it was cerebral palsy or something, you know, that they were not very mobile and they couldn't really, you know, they weren't coordinated. So it was, you know, but they were playing and they're doing all these things to, like you were saying, adapt to be able to do things. And you could tell that they all just really loved each other. It was just this amazing chemistry, and then it, you know, it goes on. So I haven't finished watching it, but tell our listeners some about your experiences. I mean, these people, what I did see, and I've seen it actually before too, is, you know, when they were lying down in front of buses to demand more, you know, accessible buses, because until they had buses that would quote unquote kneel, so people could get their wheelchairs on, and the ramps, people couldn't ride buses and were stuck at home. And as you said, now everybody's stuck at home, except the essential workers, who are often the throwaway workers, so the throwaway people. So just tell us more about that.
Yes, well, you see, this is the thing. Before the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed, see, a lot of people have no sense of how it was, but the stuff that kind of has become just standard wasn't back then. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about it was when I was first injured, which was on September 30th, 1977, there was nothing was accessible. And part of what happened was, well, the fact is that I was literally stabbed in the back. I have a spinal cord injury. And in order to get accessible housing and transportation so that I could go to graduate school at Georgia State University, they didn't have any place to stay in. So I had to allow myself to be institutionalized. I had to move into a place called the Vocational Rehabilitation Spinal Cord Residence, located on the grounds of the Georgia Mental Health Institute, in order to have accessible housing and transportation to go to school. Back then, there was no such thing. And all of the buses, you had to be able to climb up on the buses. Well, I was the only one with a spinal cord injury at this place that was beginning to walk a little bit. So I have it deep inside of me what it's like to not have access to public transportation and have housing. And back then, of course, we weren't members of the public considered. We weren't real citizens. And so it wasn't until 1975, with the passage of the Education for All Handicapped Children's Act, that it was even necessary to attempt to teach children with disabilities in public education. And now they call it IDEA, but they still don't have the IDEA very well. Children and students with disabilities are still not being appropriately accommodated in many, many places. But there has been these advances, and yes, we went all over the place. We went, and also the American Public Transit Association, we went and disrupted their conventions all over the place and got arrested. So this is what happened. And the Crip Camp, please look it up, anybody, please. It's so important. And I was actually present at some of the events that are depicted in that. My face wasn't shown, but I was there. And it's one of the deep honors of my life that I had the chance to do that. But when the signing was on July 26th, 1990, and that was 30 years ago, at that time, I actually was invited and could have gone to the signing in the Rose Garden, but I didn't, in part because my sister Carol, who had survived 12 brain surgeries, the tumors went multiple, she was on hospice and she was dying, and that was my priority. And she died 30 years ago, never having any of the advantages of having the Americans with Disabilities Act. And a lot of people live their whole lives fighting for rights, different rights, including rights for people with disabilities. But the other thing is that a lot of people, anybody who belongs to any other kind of minority besides having a disability, it gets compounded. There's just a higher percentage. And part of that is all the other forms of discrimination, which if you pile them up on top of each other, become more and more and more disabling and deadly. And in this crisis, our people are being allowed to die or being denied services. I have many friends of mine who require personal assistance. They fought very hard so they can live in the community, in freedom, and they can't get help. Their PCAs don't want to come because of COVID. This is not a luxury, what they need, it's to survive.
So what's happening with those people whose aides aren't coming?
Well, guess what? If they get caught, then they get put in nursing homes. Isn't that nice? Where we know COVID is rampant and people are dying all the time. So, yes, a lot of our people are really, really suffering. We're isolated. If you know anybody or if you are somebody with a disability, be brave, be bold, reach out, and then reach deep inside. Our lives are worth living. Our lives are important, and we have a great deal to offer to this world.
I just wanted to mention that the Crip Camp is available on Netflix, which is where I'm watching it. So a lot of people get Netflix, and you could watch it there. So I'm speaking with Elaine Kolb, who, as you've been hearing, is a disability rights activist and someone who cares about a lot of justice and injustice issues in the world. And I wanted to ask you, Elaine, one time a few years ago, I was at a meeting, a gathering, coffee with a senator, our senator, who is Senator Marty Looney, who happens to be the president of the Senate in Connecticut. And it was packed. It was this little coffee shop, but there were tons of people there. And I remember that you, when you know, you raised your hand to speak, and you talked about how the people with disabilities are the biggest minority in the biggest minority in the world, which isn't a minority, but just talk about that. And because if you don't live most of your life with a disability, by the time you're done, you probably have more than one. So yeah, talk about that, and you know, if it relates to any other kinds of legislation or policy changes that you'd like to see, you can talk about that too.
Well, yes, people with disabilities, different people cut the cards different ways, but we are the largest minority in this country and in the world. And it is everywhere that there are people with disabilities. Some of us are born with disabilities, some of us acquire disabilities along the way, and like you said, if you live long enough, you will acquire some disabilities. So I think what it's important for people to realize is that this is, at any one time, we're the largest minority. But if you look at the lifespan experience of human beings, that it is actually a majority experience. This is something that you definitely need to deal with. And part of it is that there is a huge avoidance. And there are two aspects. There's something called ableism, and that's kind of like racism and sexism and all like that. So that realm. But there's also something that's called disabilophobia, the fear of disability. And that is like homophobia. And some of us get to experience both, because I'm also a lesbian. So the thing is, when people are afraid, they will do horrible things. So people are afraid of disability. And people are afraid that they will acquire a disability, or that somebody will think they're disabled. So all over the world, wherever there is a crisis, guess what? It creates more and more people with disabilities. Every natural disaster, some of the non-disabled people who stay behind helping people with disabilities who can't escape. And they're trying to help. This is just everywhere. When you have to evacuate an area, what if you're a person with a disability? Or if when the electricity goes down, what about those of us that are on breathing equipment? There's no electricity. We die. And that's not counted as, it's like we die quietly, silently, individually. And part of it is that people are so afraid and they do not see that our lives are valuable. But it's, look up the eugenics movement, because the eugenics movement is very clear about devaluing people with disabilities as well as racial minorities, which are actually the majority of the world, but you know, viewed from white male perspective, European perspective and stuff, the aspect of eugenics was that, well, we want to have better people, better breeding. And who did they get rid of? People with disabilities. And it's still part of the underlying philosophical basis for why our lives are so devalued, and that it's considered a good thing if they get rid of us. And the frightening thing is that the eugenics movement now has blossomed, and it's huge in Europe. Now they're even saying that, you know, just because you're tired of life, that you can be euthanized by choice. Kill me now. This is terrible. Life is precious. And if we have to value all forms of life, including people with disabilities and all living things, if we don't start doing that, valuing all life, everything, we're doomed. So that's why, yes, it was 75 years ago we dropped the bombs, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And, oh, 50 years ago, I went to Cuba, and I got to see, out of necessity, because of the embargo, they had to recycle everything, and they were really good at it. We could learn a lot from them, and also from their medical system. 40 years ago, I went to Australia as part of the International Year of Disabled Persons. That was 1980 and 81. That was, you know, 10 years before the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, but I got a strong, strong experience traveling all over Australia, and I got to see what's similar and what's different. People with disabilities have similar experiences all over the world. We are the largest minority. 30 years ago, we passed the Americans with Disabilities Act. We have a long ways to go. But right now, because of that, some of the people who were able to take some advantage of the Americans with Disabilities Act and get some education and get into positions, these are the people that are doing the Crip Camp stuff. These are the people that are doing the ADA 30 commemorations in various places. These are people very often who have been underemployed or unemployed because of the fact that ableism and disabilophobia still makes it hard for us to get employed, even though we're highly qualified. And then they wouldn't employ us because they wouldn't provide the accommodations, which are now becoming standard. So the opportunities and stuff, the opportunities to realize some of the visions for real survival and opportunity for all people must include people with disabilities. We have a lot to share and a lot to teach.
Wow, that's a wrap. I can't believe we ended at the time I needed to end to fit our show on the air. That I was gonna have to call it, but you did it. You ended it perfectly. So I've been speaking with, or Elaine's been speaking with us. Elaine Kolb, who is a disability rights activist and much more, lives in West Haven, Connecticut, and loves the boardwalk, which is where we are, with our masks on. And I've got my mic on a pole so we can keep our distance and be very safe. And I want to thank everyone for listening. You've been listening to The Forest and the Trees, Global and Local Perspectives on the Environment, with your host, Melinda Tuhus. Tune in on the second Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. here on WPKN 89.5 FM for more environmental and lots of other kinds of news you can use.